4CIB now presents The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group. With a large team of highly experienced professionals, you can feel safe knowing that Bell Legal can help you with your legal needs.
And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You this Tuesday morning. Your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 9:30. All we need you to do is get on the telephone, and our number is 5520888. That's 07 5520888 if you're south of the Tweed River. Otherwise, just straight through 5520888. And this, of course, is our last program before Easter. And so if you particularly need some advice in the lead up to Easter, you'd better give us a call today. In the meantime, thank you to all the people who called in last week. Again, we've had a run of great programs over the last few weeks, so thank you to all of those callers. The only downside of getting so many calls has been that it has restricted my ability to talk about other issues that I thought that people might be interested in. And so while we're waiting for some calls to come in, I'll mention a few of those items to you. So the first one that I was going to mention was that the ACCC has launched proceedings against Meta, which most of us would really know as Facebook, about allowing advertisements to go to air on Meta or on Facebook, which are basically scam advertisements. And a lot of these have involved allegations or promotions that particular celebrities or well-known people are promoting these things. A recent one was Bitcoin. There have been a number of ones for Bitcoin, and you may have seen that, if you've seen any of these advertisements, that David Koch from Sunrise was allegedly promoting Bitcoin, as was Twiggy Forrest. And the interesting thing about Twiggy Forrest is he's actually, as probably one of the richest men in Australia, has personally issued legal proceedings against Meta or Facebook because they've used his image and alleged that he was promoting the use of Bitcoin as a means of making wealth, which of course was entirely false. So good on Twiggy Forrest for doing that, and good on the ACCC for taking action against Facebook. There are so many things I think that Facebook does where they really should be brought to task, and brought to task quickly. And unfortunately, as they say, the wheels of justice might appear to turn slowly, but turn they do. But enough of that. We've got a couple of callers online, and we'll say a very good morning to Eddie. G'day, Eddie. How are you today?
Not too bad, thank you.
That's good. How can we help you today, Eddie?
About 6 or 8 weeks ago, I was looking at my bank statement. Sorry. And I noticed that there's been $30 being taken out each month for a particular art union. Mm-hmm. And I have never bought a ticket, and I have never signed anything to say I want the tickets.
Mm.
I went and asked my bank, and they said they've been taking it out for 6 months.
Right.
Said, well, I want that money back. I said, I've never signed anything. They've never sent me out anything to say I've got tickets in an art union.
Mm.
And I'm just wondering what I can do about it.
Well,
I rang them up and I asked for my money back, and they said, yes, we'll give it back. And then about a week later, I got a letter saying your request has been denied.
Well, I think what I would be doing would be asking them to prove that you ever signed up to buy those art union tickets, because they would need to have something, and you need to be very careful with these art union tickets, because I know, you know, you'll get a thing in the mail saying, oh, you know, you can buy a ticket in this art union, or if you tick this box, you can have a monthly a regular monthly ticket, or you can have a ticket in each draw, whatever it is. But Eddie, the simple fact of the matter is that if you did not sign up to have that money taken from your account and to buy tickets in the Art Union, you're definitely entitled to your money back. And I would be getting on to Consumer Affairs in relation to it in the first instance. But I would be writing. I think initially I would be trying to ring the Art Union, and I would be wanting to get on to someone at a high level. So I would be saying, no, look, I want to speak to the managing director or the CFO or the CEO or whatever to do it.
I've tried that.
And what, they won't speak to you?
Well, somebody spoke to me, but they're not high up.
Right, okay. And then, but you've, more importantly, you've got this letter saying they're not going to refund. The only other thing I could suggest you do would be to get on to Consumer Affairs. Have you got a pen handy, and I can give you the number?
Just a minute. Yeah, righty-o.
So their number is 137468. And if
137468. 7468.
Yes, and okay. If it's a particularly well-known Art Union, and I don't want you mentioning the name on air, but if it's a particularly well-known Art Union, they're not going to want the adverse publicity. So I think if you are in the right and you definitely have never subscribed to it, you will definitely get your money back. All right, then?
Okay,
Eddie, all the very best. Time on 4CRB rolls along 12 and a half minutes, or coming up to 13 minutes past nine, as we say good morning to Wendy. G'day, Wendy. How are you today? Wendy, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, can you just turn your radio down in the background? Yes. I think you'll find it easier for us to talk.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I've turned it off.
Good on you. How can I help you today?
I just wanted to know, John, if I've got a power of attorney, enduring power of attorney for my husband who has dementia, and then I end up in a situation where my enduring power of attorney takes over for me, what happens to his?
Does he have an alternate attorney under his power of attorney? So
no.
In other words, so it's just simply you, his attorney. Who's your attorney? Someone else, not your husband.
That's right, yep.
Okay. I always recommend when people do powers of attorney, and look, quite honestly, Wendy, it's a common problem that I see in reviewing powers of attorney that have been prepared elsewhere, but I always recommend that there be a minimum of two attorneys and preferably three, so that there's a couple of reserve attorneys. So a common one for a husband and wife would be that they appoint each other as attorney, but if the other of them is unable or unwilling, then a third person will be the attorney. Now, unfortunately, in your situation where your husband doesn't have that alternate attorney, it may eventually be the case that someone will have to make an application to QCAT to have an administrator and guardian appointed if you become unable to carry out those duties. So if he is certainly, I mean, is he certainly at a point now where he would be unable to make a new power of attorney?
In the mornings, he often could. He could.
Right.
The afternoon, when the sundowning starts.
Yep. So what you could possibly do, I would suggest that you go and see your doctor and just explain the situation to your doctor, because you're going to need a medical certificate which says that he has the capacity to make a new power of attorney. And if the doctor says, look, on balance, I think that he does have the capacity to make a power of attorney, provided that it is carried out first thing in the morning or something of that nature, you very well could get a lawyer to make a new power of attorney and put some alternate attorneys in now. That would be the easiest way to deal with the issue. But if you can't get the doctor's letter, then you may be stuck with the only other alternative, and that is that if and when you do lose capacity, or when you realise you're starting to lose capacity, you need to alert someone, and it may be the person who you've appointed as attorney, to say, look, If I lose capacity, you're going to have to make an application to become the administrator of my husband's affairs as well as his guardian. All right, then?
And what I was going to say is, as we've got joint ownership of everything...
Yes.
Okay. So we don't have much choice. I've appointed a brother who...
Mm-hmm.
We're all of us getting old.
Yep.
And I was going to put in my enduring power of attorney. He's agreed to do it, but it is a bit of an onerous thing for him too. That he, I said, you employ a solicitor to help you. He's in another state anyway. Could I say to him, in my enduring power of attorney, could he attempt make sure that my husband is okay as well?
Well, if you're attorney for your husband, you presently could engage a lawyer to do on a standby to do things for your husband as and when that becomes necessary. Your brother as attorney could engage someone on standby to act for your husband when that situation arises. But if something happened to you, if you in fact passed away, then an administrator and a guardian would need to be appointed. All right, then?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Wendy.
And you can you appoint a solicitor as an alternative
attorney?
Enduring
power? Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can appoint anyone you like. You can't appoint someone who's obviously bankrupt, but you can appoint your accountant. You can appoint your solicitor. You can appoint a trusted friend. All right, then.
And like we could choose a John Fleshley down on Gold Coast, you, in other words, or your office, even though we're not living on the Gold Coast.
Well, that may be the case.
Yes. Who else.
Yes.
Mm.
So that certainly can be done. All right, Wendy.
All right. Thank
nice to talk to
much.
You. Bye now. And the time rolls along. It's 17 and a half, 18 minutes past nine. As we say, good morning to Paul. G'day, Paul. How are you? Paul, are you there?
I'm here. Yeah, good. Thank you.
How can I help you? Yeah, going well, Paul. What about you?
Oh, not too bad.
How can I help?
I'd like to talk to you about domestic side fence regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've had our neighbour for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he's getting old and demented, but we won't get into that.
Mm-hmm.
We agreed 8 years ago to take down the old timber fence and put up a colobond fence.
Right.
And the colobond fence is 1,800 high to 6 metres from the front boundary, and then it drops down to 1,200. Okay. He's gone and put up a fence, another colobond fence of a different colour, and taken it to 1,800 right to the front boundary for 6 metres.
Right.
And he's made it over 1,800, just over 18, about 1,850. And he's put it on his side of the fence, but because he can't go into the ground more than 200 mil because of a pipe, to get strength, he had to attach it to the existing fence.
Right.
So he screwed it to the existing fence without our permission. What he's actually essentially done is blocked out our water view and to a certain degree.
Right.
So we've investigated it, but I just want to know what is the law in regards to domestic fencing.
Right. Well, certainly you can put a second fence inside a dividing fence. There's nothing to stop you doing that. The question would be whether the height of the fence is legal. I thought that dividing fences could not exceed 1,800 in height. But also, if it's going down, is this going down to a canal or something? Is it?
No. It goes. We have a water view over the road, over the park.
Oh, right, okay.
I think,
have you spoken to the council about what the fence regulations are in your area?
Yes, we have, and we've lodged a complaint.
Right.
And then the council, they're coming out in about 6 or 8 weeks. They're not very fast, unfortunately.
No.
But there's also a fencing regulation. That's set up, which we can go through.
Well, you can go through the Queensland Building Services Authority, or you can go through QCAT as well.
What my argument is, can a person just go and do that? Can they just go and put up a fence, different to the rest of the area?
The short answer to the question is, as long as they comply with the fencing requirements, so they don't exceed whatever the maximum height is, and if they put it on their land, the short answer to the question, Paul, is yes.
It's very loose law.
It's very unsatisfactory. I've seen a few of these disputes over the years, in relation to fixing the fence to the wall. Well, I think that's questionable as to whether you can do that. But then for example, if you had a tilt panel fence between two properties, it's not unusual for people to screw things to their side of the fence either. For example, to put up hanging baskets or whatever. So there's a bit of common sense comes into it as well. But
A mutual fence. Both agree to.
Technically, you own your half. So you split the colour bond panel down the middle, and you own half and they own half, but putting something through the fence so that it's come out on your side, I would say, is definitely not permitted without your approval. So that might be something that you could go to QCAT on. But we'll have to leave it there, Paul. Unfortunately, we've got quite a few callers waiting.
No, all the best. Time.
Bye now. And the time just continues to roll along. It's just coming up to 23 minutes past 9 as we say good morning to Gerard. G'day, Gerard.
Good morning. How are you? Thank you very well, and your good selves.
I'm well indeed. How can I help you today?
The issue, am I talking to John?
You sure are.
Oh, John, the issue relates to a horse arena put into a neighbour's area on a floodplain.
A horse arena. Right, yes.
Put into, on the back of a floodplain on their property.
Mm-hmm.
That was done in 01.
Mm-hmm.
And then other works were done in 16 with new neighbours. The property's been sold a few times.
Mm-hmm.
But in 16, this time, the earthworks they did diverted from the horse arena down our spoon drain, which is also aligned with the boundary and also aligned with our access road out to our the front road.
Right.
The question is, you mentioned a case back in England in the 1800s, as that was the precedent used, that it was illegal or was incorrect, and that the issue should be resolved. Do you recall that discussion that you had?
Yes, I do. That was quite a few weeks ago. Yes, I think from memory the case that I mentioned was a very old English case of Rylands versus Fletcher, and that related to Rylands, R-Y-L-A-N-D-S, versus Fletcher.
Yes.
And it was a very old case that related to a fellow that built a dam on his property, but didn't realise that there were abandoned mine shafts, or he didn't take account of the fact that there were abandoned mine shafts under the property, which connected up to the mines on the adjoining property. And the result was that when the dam was filled, the wall between the dam and the mine shafts broke, and the mine shafts were flooded. So basically, the rationale behind the case essentially is this, that water is entitled to flow naturally where it flows according to the contour of the land. Now, if you divert the water course and
it's been done twice, John,
and it results in damage to your property, then that's something that you have a cause of action for.
It's called cause of action, is it?
Yes, you have a cause of action. You have a right to make a claim if the diversion of the water course is now causing damage to your property. So
it does regularly. Every time we get a flow from storm water, it's diverted down our... We have a little spoon drain beside our road getting out. It was to control our water coming off from the garage and also the house. So we kept it in our property. In the plans that I've only recently been able to get onto, it shows that the water that is going into the horse arena should be contained within the horse arena and then down to their swamp area and then, of course, across to our area, across our causeway. What's happened, obviously, and the fortunate thing is I've had a photograph of the original site prior to the horse arena.
Yes.
And now I've got, obviously, the horse arena, and regularly when the flow comes through, we are seeing the diversion, probably 90% now of the... We call it a floodplain between our two little valleys.
Yep.
So it's going down our spoon drain, our road, cutting out our road. We lose access every time it happens. We have a lot of dross and rocks being churned out and taken down our spoon drain, which means that we can't get out. We had to recently cancel a hospital appointment, doctor's appointment, a few other issues, deliveries, etc. So, look, so there is a case.
Yes, what I would do, what I would suggest you do is write a letter to your neighbour pointing out that this...
We have done this and we've communicated. We've communicated. They've done naught about it.
All right.
In fact, we stood on the wall and nominated what was the issue, explained where the diversion is. We also have a Google map highlighting the work done and the diversion created, and then of course we've got the photographs of the regularly of the flow of water.
Yes. So Gerard, what I would suggest you do is, if you haven't already done so, you could speak to the council, because the council...
We have.
Okay, and if they've done nothing, then what I would suggest you do is get legal advice.
They did one show of cause. I think they called it show of
cause. Yes.
And that was on the title as well, but it's since been taken up. So you're suggesting follow up with council?
Yes, because they should not be allowing the watercourse to be changed without approval. And then secondly, if that brings no success, unfortunately, your only option is going to be to take legal action.
Indeed.
All right, then.
I do appreciate that, John.
No trouble.
I'm sorry, I missed between Ryland and Fletcher. When was that case?
Oh,
1800.
Oh, crikey, it's back in 18 something. But if you Google Rylands versus Fletcher, I'm sure it'll come up.
I do appreciate your time and provide a lot of great information to we, the ones who are uninformed.
Well, my pleasure. All the very best, Gerard. And the time on 4CRB is 28 minutes past 9. We'll say hello to Ruth. G'day, Ruth. How are you today? Ruth, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I am, John.
How can I help you today?
I just have a query about another property that I own that my son has been living in for a number of years. I made a verbal promise to him that he could have the house, but he would have to incur all costs in relation to transferring it across to his name.
Mm-hmm.
I've since been down to the property, and it's unkept. It looks like no one lives there.
Mm-hmm.
So my concern is, legally, am I committed to that?
No. No, you're not. Because for any transaction in relation to land to be legally enforceable, it must be in writing. So, no, you're not. The other side of it too, Ruth, that I'm not sure whether you considered, but you would also need to consider that if it's not the property you live in, you very well may have a capital gains tax problem if you transfer.
I did live in there. Yeah, no, I lived in there for a number of years.
But that will only take account of those years, and any gain in value after you vacated the property very well may be taxable. So just bear that in mind. But we'll have to leave it there, Ruth. Unfortunately, we're just pressing up to the news. All right, then.
Okay, thanks very much.
All the best. And we still have Sheridan online, but, we've probably got time to quickly speak to Sheridan. Good morning, Sheridan.
Hi.
Sheridan, good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning. Thanks very much for taking the call. Look, it's just a real quick question. I've got a really high tree in my property. You know, I'm talking about a gazillion feet high, and it blows the leaves into my neighbour's pool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get the tree removed is about $8,000.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's one of these big colourwood trees.
Mm.
I feel sorry for the neighbour. Mm. Do I have... What's the situation there?
Well, look, legally, you're probably not responsible for it. The other issue that you're probably going to face is, depending on where it is on the property, is going to be whether the council will actually permit you to cut it down. If it's over a certain girth, you may not be permitted to cut it down if the tree is healthy.
Gotcha.
So you'd need to get approval to remove it. I would be suggesting that the practical way to deal with it is to speak with your neighbour about it, just point out, look, you know, tell your neighbour you sympathise with him with the problem that it causes, and, you know, maybe seek some agreement off your neighbour as to how you might share the cost of removing the tree. And then from there, you would also need to speak to the council to see whether you can actually legally cut it down.
Sure, yeah, an application's over $400 to put in to see if you can legally cut it down.
Yeah, I think if you can probably look something up online. How close is it to the boundary fence?
Oh, it's 30 metres away from the boundary.
Okay, well, yeah, because if it's within, I'm just trying to think of the distance, it's one and a half or
couple of metres.
Yeah, it's only 1.5 or 2 metres, you can legally cut it down. But if it's in the middle of the property, you've got a problem. So the first thing you probably need to do is maybe agree with the neighbour. Maybe you could say to the neighbour, look, you're prepared, if you can get agreement in principle that, you know, how you're going to share the cost of cutting it down, assuming you can get consent. But in the first instance, maybe you say to the neighbour, look, you know, if you fund the application to get approval on to cut it down, I'm quite happy to support it. All right, then.
All right. Well, thanks
okay,
so much,
Sheridan.
For trouble.
All the very best. And that's all we have time for today. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. Thank you to all the people who've called in to make such an interesting program. I'll look forward to being back with you next Tuesday for more of The Law and You. But between now and then, have a happy Holy Easter. Goodbye and God bless.
You've been listening to The Law and You. Proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group, the Gold Coast's longest established law firm. Helping Gold Coasters since 1955. Call them today on 5597 3366.